Hello, and thanks for choosing this podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello to everyone tuning in, no matter if you are a regular or this is the first one you've listened to. If you are here as a newbie, then feel free to explore the archive as we've covered a really wide range of InfoSec topics. I'm sure there's something in there for everyone. A lot of people enjoy this podcast while walking their dog, so I hope the weather has been good to you and your doggy while you are both getting your exercise. It's been a strange old summer in the UK, so I hope it's been a bit kinder no matter where you are. I just wonder if there were a podcast for dogs, what would be on it? Pup music rather than pop music, I guess. And perhaps the sounds of cans of dog food being opened. I'm sure that would win it quite a wide audience among our doggy brethren. Anywho, this episode is continuing our exploration of the role of the Business Information Security Officer, the BISO, and seeks to expose just what a BISO does all day. To answer that question, we have some real-life BISOs with us. First up is Adriano Pinheiro, who is a BISO at air transport technology service firm, CETA. Hello, Adriano.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. So are you one of the first BISOs at CETA? Are there other ones up there as well?
Yeah, there are other ones. I would say that I'm the last one of the first wave. So in CETA, the BISO role, it has pretty much a year and a half, almost two. So it's a very recent introduction of that role in the company.
Excellent. Thank you. The second BISO we have is Sneha Ahuja, who is a BISO at heavy equipment and product manufacturing management firm Alfa Laval. Hello, Sneha.
Hey, Mark. The weather this side is already very nice. So
good. Excellent. If you go for a walk later, you'll be able to enjoy it. So I was wondering, are there more BISOs at Alfa Laval? Are you the only one? Or
no, we are a good team of six to be hired soon. And this role has been established around close to 2 years, two plus years now.
That's kind of interesting. Cool. Yeah, we'll explore that in a bit. Also here is Paul Watts, who needs no introduction, but I'm going to do it anyway. Paul is a former CISO who has researched and written about the BISO. So hello, Paul.
Hello. I love a good BISO, me, but I couldn't eat a whole one.
You've observed BISOs in the wild for quite a while, haven't you? I think I just wondered if there are any particular evolutionary pressures that brought them into being. Are they the warm-blooded mammals that are taking over from dinosaurs and things like that? I don't know what brought them about. Why are they suddenly all over the place?
Well, I'm not going to go all Attenborough on you, but you know, I've hired a few BISOs in my time, and you know, for me, selfishly as a CISO, the reason why I employed BISOs is I was expected to have eyes and ears right across the length and breadth of my business, and that is physically impossible. So BISOs were a very important part of my security function because they gave me visibility of what was going on at business level right across the organisation. And actually, it takes the tradecraft of security and puts business right in the centre of it, using security to solve business challenges, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, so does that, Adriano, Sneha, does that sound like the kind of thing you guys are doing?
Yeah, I would say so, with some caveats, depending on the size of the organization. But the need is there, especially when the complexity of the technology footprint that we end up having in the modern world. More and more, we need those eyes on the field to collect what is exactly needed. And then actually what it means is that the security is going to be really embedded in the business, right? And not a standalone function that no one knows about it and everybody hates it. So,
Sneha, is that the same for you? Just sort of, yeah.
I'll add another perspective to it, you know, and some more organs, maybe I'll call it. These are the arms or the hands of the CISO that navigate into the organization and help them implement what they want to. No, rather just on the ground, you know, sit down with the business and help them implement what you want them to do and how they want them to do. And in the same time, tell them why they want you to do these controls. Why are they important? What do they mean about your business?
I think that's a great analogy as well, because one of the things that BISOs can do that CISOs can't do is the application of context. So I can say implement a control, but you can then take that to the business and talk about why that control is important in context. And that's how you get the win, because they need to understand what it means to them. And with the best will in the world, I can't articulate that at that operational level, and that's where BISOs are perfectly placed. Arms and legs. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's a good way to think of it. But is there, for both you two, has the BISO role emerged from a larger strategic program of change or something like that? I don't know if your organizations are trying to do something else and that's why you've been, or is it just a realization that that security needs to be closer to the business?
It's not an organizational change across Alfa Laval, but really more on the digital front. And Then when the digital front decided to categorize itself into different streams, and in parallel, security was getting more and more important, but the understanding wasn't getting as clear as the importance was growing. So it just meant that they needed more people who can be in congruence to the fact that, okay, business needs this, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know when to do it and what to do. So how do we help?
Yeah, interesting. At CETA was a bit of the opposite. It was actually an organization change driven by an increased risk exposure of our solutions, not only on customer premises, but also hosted environments, cloud, and then enterprise infrastructure. And it was really to attack and then have the right controls to mitigate the risks that we were, let's say, ingesting that we shouldn't. And that goes across not only for the, let's call it the enterprise footprint, the way we develop and deliver services, but also supporting the sales team to ensure that we are not getting into trouble, right, by saying certain things that we are not possibly compliant to, and also being attentive to new regulations and certification demands. So it was really more from a risk exposure that we wanted to take care of.
Yeah, I guess slightly different, but do you think you, even though you both have the same title, are you doing the same kinds of things? I don't know, Paul, if you found that, is that, are there lots of different types of BISO?
Well, do you know what? It's an interesting one, that, because I think BISOs are going to go through the sort of identity crisis that chief information security officers have gone through. Yep. There is a huge amount of ambiguity and expectation that needs to be managed. And you know, I mean, I'd ask this question of both of you, you know, did you find in the early part of your tenure that there was a lot of negotiation where you were actually having to set the rules of the role in terms of what you should or should not be doing? What we have noticed as well in, you know, in our analysis of BISOs across the world, huge differentiations in salaries, in seniority, and in remit. So I don't know, but I throw that question out to both of you. Have you found that you've had the opportunity to shape your role as you've gone along, or has it been relatively static for you?
I think I'll start with saying that I've been in this role only 14 months now, and my organization has seen this role for around 24, 25 months now. So the role itself has evolved in both. I have, as an individual, evolved in that role, but the role in the company has also evolved. At the same time, I said we are six of us, right? And none of us work exactly the same way, even within the same organization. So it's not a mold that you can put people in and then replicate. There's a reason why we have different streams, and there's a reason why there is one BISO dedicated to each stream, because the requirements of each stream and how they operate are different. And then hence how the BISO operates is different. The risks maybe that they look at is different. The stakeholders are different. Their end users are different, or customers are different. That could be one reason why. However, even as individuals, and the role is evolving in the industry.
Yeah, what I would say and a compliment is that I don't really expect that the BISO role long term is going to be as defined as the CISO. And the reason is because the BISO, it is very and very close to different business, right? So we have to adjust to the business needs. Otherwise, what is our value being that close to the business? So it's a fair assessment that we are going, or will go, through an identity crisis. But really, I don't think we should have the aim to set a very defined and role. But on an organization and let's say business area basis, yes, we have to define what is in scope and out of scope. And that, in my experience in CETA, we were able to actually shape the role as we saw that what was needed. But again, it's a two-way street, right? We see it from a central perspective. When we get close to the business and see what the business needs, we need to go back and then do some adjustments, right? And one more thing I'd like to add that maybe we didn't cover that much in the first part. I think the BISO has also a very important thing is to challenge the CISO. And that's tricky and being our boss. But at the same time, we have a business to represent where security has to be in the right context, right?
Yeah, that's interesting because I did wonder about whether you're the sort of advance guard for the CISO, but I guess you're not. You are that sort of. You go. The information flows both ways from CISO downwards and from the business upwards as well.
I think it has to be right because I consider the BISO as it's a stakeholder management function where we have internal customers and then. If we don't gain their trust, we don't understand their business and just come with controls, with policies, standards, they're going to just say, okay, I don't need you guys. Let me do my own stuff, right? So.
Yeah, that's a quite familiar criticism of InfoSec. But I wonder if, you know, are you doing the things InfoSec should have always done in terms of getting close to the business, but they just didn't have the people there to do that?
I would say that it's being done on a more consistent way. So that's what makes a difference. So then you have continuity and then you show the value that is behind those actions, right? But one thing also about the BISO role, they have been there for a number of years, many years, I would say. I've been doing similar part of that job 5-6 years ago, but it was not that formalized under a certain name. So I think that type of podcast and then the ISF papers out there, they're very important to solidify the role as an identity, as well as Paul was saying, to really shape it up as an influencer within the information security aspect or community. If you can
you make a really interesting point there. We did observe a number of organizations that were actually on a bit of a journey, and the BISO was a natural progression of that journey. So they were moving in the space where they were trying to work on awareness and education and cultural change, and they were creating an entity known as Security Champions, which are almost like an omnidirectional messenger to take those CISO-led, center-led messages and disperse them and add context so that they made sense at a business level. But I think as very similar to what happened in the world of IT, where IT started as a very transactional order-taking department, and then over time we realized, as technology became more and more important to business, trade, and industry, that there needed to be a partnership. And I think security's kind of come of age, and we realize that that's exactly the same for security now. So the evolution of security champions to BISOs in certain organizations is actually a logical progression for that. What I would also say as a CISO is if the business, when asked, you know, who is the responsible for security, if they say Adriano instead of Paul Watts, actually, I don't have a particular problem with that. What's important to me is the business recognizes that there is some sort of focal point for security that has their back and has their interest and is trying to translate all of this mundane bureaucratic security and risk management into something that's valuable to the business. And actually, I would rather that they were talking to Adriano first than talking to me, because my responsibilities as a security leader have now changed. I have to engage with the board, with investors, with shareholders, with suppliers, with people like that. The business need the attention and they need the time. And that's where the BISO role, I really think, is coming into its own now.
I think I can reflect on what Paul said, you know, that IT started as what, just hardware, software installed and all of that. And then grew. There was ITIL. I did service management myself. And I think what I did was that 18 years back or so as a service manager, I can see that match, that how a BISO is now the bridge between security and business. And it kind of echoes the same way that IT wanted to bridge that gap, that security now wants to bridge that gap with business.
Yeah. So does every organization need BISOs, do we think, or every large organization that takes information security seriously? Are they needed everywhere?
I would say rather the industries which are not so regulated, those that don't understand security and compliance. I mean, those have not been historically regulated. Now to say industries are not regulated, I should just bite my tongue. But, you know, with these two and all of that, name an industry which is not, but those that are newly being introduced to regulations, but still don't have a lot of PII, still don't do, you know, not retail, not these, but these heavy industries, they probably need BESOs because their understanding already of IT is very minimum. And then to add a security layer to it is, it's just too complicated. It's just too time consuming. They feel it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, when I was doing the research for the BESO paper, I tried to establish what the potential critical mass, what that tipping point would be. And it was really hard to put a kind of number on it. I think what it came down to your point, I think is a combination of size and scale and maybe maturity that then determines where that operating model needs to change. One of the things I said in the paper is that I think, yeah, certainly since the pandemic, you know, I know we don't like talking about it, but let's just kind of take ourselves back there a little bit. I think businesses realize the importance of agility and autonomy at an operational level is the key for businesses being able to stay in front of their competition. And I've seen those changes in business operational models where, you know, a lot of autonomy and empowerment has been passed into those echelons of the business. But yet in security, we still kind of operate with a center-led approach. And it may be that I think what we're starting to see with BESOs is that dispersal. So rather than having that center-led security function, we're starting to see a bit of a dispersal into the businesses. So depending on the size and scale and maturity of your organization is probably the determinant factor as to whether you need BESOs or not. If you're a very small organization, probably not. But that doesn't mean that the CISO doesn't need some sort of business partnering arrangement in place. Whether we hang a label over that and call it a BESO, I don't know. But there are a lot of considerations there.
I think as a function, it's needed. There is no question about it. Now, if you're going to hire a full-time employee to be a BESO, that's a dimensioning exercise that needs to go in the company, right? Yeah. And in certain cases, you want to pair up the BESO with another security function, which could be some sort of specialist in certain area that the business needs. Yeah. So I think that's the flexibility that I was talking about. It's not one recipe that's going to fit for all, right? So it has to be adjusted to the context you are in.
Yes, definitely.
But we're glad that Adriano put that thought and it reminded me to say that we are not all six full-time BESOs. Okay. In addition to the BESO role, which is 50% of our role, the other role is leading a security capability. So half of my time is leading supply chain cyber risk management. So I lead that function across the organization and then I'm BESO for one of the stream in the organization.
Right.
And I must tell you that helps me keep my sanity in place.
Really? Wow.
but it's a very valid point, isn't it, that you're making. My job it is supposed to be full-time BESO, but we end up doing other things because it helps us to also be in touch with security, right? And the practices and order the challenges across the company. So it's a very valid point. Thank you.
I think we should ask that question about what you do day to day. Is there a lot of meetings, I guess, a lot of reports? And
It's a combination. It's like so many things. It's hard to describe that one day after the order is going to be the same. But of course, there are recurrent things such as looking at different customer requirements and then trying to see what is that our company would how we would fit those requirements and fulfill them. There are other aspects that are security and tailored security awareness sessions that is really dedicated to the business, looking at controls and then supporting on answering questionnaires from our customers. So it's a diversity of things. It depends on the week. It depends on also on the strategy of the company. Sometimes to the end of the quarter, there's going to be a severe push on sales. I end up being a bit more dedicated to sales, and that goes on in the different ways.
Just something to add to that, you know, historically, one of the challenges that we've had as an industry in terms of acquiring, retaining, and nurturing talent is that a technical background was seen as a barrier to entry. One of the things that has been observed with incumbent BESOs coming into the role is they're not all having to come from a technical background. As long as the central function, dare I call it that, has the ability to, you know, translate some of those business requirements into technical need and is able to impart on those, then actually the BESO can focus predominantly on that business partnership and actually the technical requirement isn't hard and fast as a mandate. That said, of course, there's opportunities to develop in role. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. You know, the idea that you can start in that business partnering BISO style role and learn about security at a technical level as you go by, you know, co-sharing or dividing your time up into different duties. I think that's absolutely fantastic. And we really do need to work quite hard to make the security industry accessible to people without a technical background, because that isn't a constraint anymore. I mean, there's CISOs now coming into the industry that don't have a technical background, and they're absolutely smashing it. So, long may that continue. And definitely in the BISO space, we are seeing more of that happening, which I think is fantastic.
I would have initially thought I'll put down bullets of what I do on a typical day, but that was getting impossible. And then, I will just say I'm going to add to what Adriano says. And as I said, I also lead the supply chain cyber risk. And this is purely security again. I come from a technical background, and all of us, at least in this part of the organization, come from a technical background and then are hosted in business. But I do a lot of vendor assessments, so to say, review security contracts and, you know, what goes into it. But more recently, I have been participating in setting up business goals, you know, talking in that perspective, that and then setting up these annual business goals also means putting budget to things right now for what you'll need to do. And I think that's a very good way, or that's a good hold that the BISO can have, or, you know, give them a word on. Maybe you put some time, put some resources here, maybe you put some budget here, because you are saying you want to address critical security risks, then you need to put time and money into it. And then that gets added into the business goals in some other form or way, but it gets added.
Yeah, to your point on the technical background, Paul, I think it's very interesting. If I look at my career in security, I actually was lucky to have an opportunity. It was a kind of a BISO that introduced me to security. Then I kind of immersed myself in security and then acquired a lot of technical expertise. But I don't come, let's say, from the IT background or from any security background. But one thing it's for sure, at least from my experience, you need to have some technical background, at least lingo, that's going to get you to a point where you can have productive discussions either with a customer or internally to even challenge it either way, right? So I don't think the BISO role is going to be completely steered away from technical. I don't believe that. But it doesn't mean that someone that is not technical cannot do it. It can. It's just that it has the willingness to learn.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's a grounding of knowledge you need to understand, because you know what techies are like. You know, you've got to be able to at least match pitch with them to a certain degree. Otherwise, you can't have a conversation at all. So that's kind of the nature of the beast. But I think your point is well made. But the opportunity to develop, you know, deeper technical skills that you believe will benefit you on your career journey, I think that's great. I always say to, you know, students who I lecture to, or, you know, new CISOs that I mentor, you know, you have to always remember that your value to any employer is a product of knowledge and experience. And I don't want to get people caught in a catch-22 where they can't acquire the experience because no one will give them a chance at the role. So being able to transition in and learn as you go, you're acquiring skills and experience within the organization doing that role. I mean, that's a win-win for absolutely everybody. I did have a question I wanted to ask both of you, actually. Depending on the cost model within an organization, so let's say for the sake of argument that each individual subsidiary of the business owns the OPEX and the CAPEX for their investments in technology and ultimately in security. And the CISO in the center may well be able to influence, but can't necessarily dictate that money has to be spent or not spent, in contrast to some organizations where the cost center is centralized and the money comes out of a central pot. I don't know what the costing models are for your organizations, and you don't need to explain them, but would you agree with me that actually some part of the BISO role is actually a bit of sales and marketing, in terms of marketing the value proposition of what it is we're trying to do? How do you feel about that? Do you think that that's part of the role? It just kind of happens with you?
I just agree hands down, but I don't know how successful we become, because the moment you are a non-sales, non-marketing individual trying to market and trying to put numbers around it, you first need to show financial benefit. And we can show only benefit in the way of no loss. You know, that this, it's not tangible profit, but it's something that you will not lose because you put the right controls in place. So that's very tricky for us to get into that. But yes, we do have to, you know, put that hat on sometimes.
Yeah,
I'm 100% with what you're saying, Paul. It's that if you look from the control perspective, as Neil was talking about, and control implementation, it's much harder to show the value because it's based on not losing. But then if you look from the other perspective, which it is representing the company's security posture, having good discussions with customers and being out there in the market, that's an amazing value that the business can bring to the table. Now, we don't get the same sales incentives because we are not a sales team. So still, for me, it's a good part of the job that I can represent well my company and then make a difference when the discussions are related to security.
Yeah. I mean, to going in the other direction as a security leader, and it's... It wasn't something as I was, progressing up through the ranks I ever thought I'd have to do. But, you know, there are boardrooms out there that still haven't bought the meal ticket, still don't get it. And a lot of it, especially if you're the first CISO in an organization, the amount of sales and marketing that you have to do, not in the traditional sense, you know, like rocking up trying to sell them a sports car or something like that, but you have to sell the vision. You know, they have to buy in, because if they're not buying in, and this is important for BSOs as well, because if that tone at the top isn't set, that security is important and it's everybody's responsibility and it's, you know, it has a correlation to the organization's revenue streams and customer confidences and so on and so forth, you're kind of doomed to fail. So they have to buy in. So as much as the CISO is kind of selling up into the boardroom and across maybe to the investors and shareholders, you know, the BSOs being able to keep the business running alongside saying, yes, this is important. Yes, we don't mind doing this. We absolutely value the conversations we're having with Stair and Adriano, and they're really, really important. But, yeah, overnight, we've all got a little bit of sales and marketing need in our roles, after all. And it's important because I think security has realized now, I mean, Stair, you said earlier about if you're regulated, these are things that you just kind of have to do, you're compelled to do. But we know as practitioners that the carrot is better than the stick. And actually, we kind of want to be loved, and we want to show that we want to help and we want to support our businesses. But sometimes that means that we have to kind of extol the benefits of what it is that we're doing. I think BSOs are a great conduit for doing that and getting everybody's buy-in then top to bottom in the organization.
Yeah, I would say so. And we just need to be careful one aspect. And I like to see always both sides of the coin. Business being there to support and then market out the value. It's extremely important. But then we need to draw a line when the CISO should not expect that business will now generate sales, right? That's a different ball game. I mean, not that BSOs are not capable to do it. It's just that the scope of work would change significantly, I would say, and the focus that the BSOs would put on that. But truly, for me, the BSO role, it is indeed a value-driven role, and then it brings value if placed properly according to the needs of the business and the needs from a security perspective for the company.
Yeah, it's not selling in the biblical sense, and we should be clear about that. We're not putting sales targets on BSOs and commissioning them to sell sales to their subordinate businesses. But it's about just getting that buy in and getting that value.
It's more about promoting than really selling.
Diplomacy and translation, isn't it? I think it sounds like. But just a quick question for you both is sort of, why did you become BSOs? Is it a way to expand your skills or to do different things? I'm just curious about what prompted you to take on the role, Sneha?
I would say that prior to this, I was working with an IT consulting company. I was working with Capgemini, and there was not a similar setup. But if you can still say, you know, the moment when you say regional BSOs, so we have a group CISO, and then we have. For every region has a CSO, cybersecurity officer. And then that's more or less, it's not a BSO role, because then, you know, IT consulting companies don't have business. It is all IT all over. But And then from that role to this role, I think it was just a natural move when I was looking to get more into corporate industrial sector and not want to do consulting anymore. I thought this was a very, very natural move. And I was, as I said, it's a dual role, and I'm glad that it's a dual role, that I don't have to look at suppliers and vendors all the time, but at the same time, I'm not stuck with business, and I get the security and the other perspective in. So for me, it was by chance, but then it was also a very natural for me to take on this role, I guess.
Yeah, Adriano, similar for you, just sort of expand your skill set a bit, do different kinds of things.
Yeah, for me, it was a bit like back and forth. When I started into security, I had the opportunity to do a lot of the BISO role functions or a part of that. Then I moved into more GRC sort of, I would say, job roles. And then I was feeling, okay, I need something more into the concrete aspect of the job, of my day. And then that's what I like of understanding a business context and see how can we apply those security controls. There are kind of one recipe for all, but we can just push that down to a business. So let's see how can we best apply those. And the other aspect for the business for me that is quite interesting is get exposure to customers and requirements and things that are happening in the market. I think that is a quite good way to develop skills and learn from them, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you got that impression, Paul, that just sort of it's quite a rounded role by the sound of it. Because I guess, does it mean that CISOs stay in their ivory tower is the wrong word, but sort of technical domain kind of thing, really? I just wonder what how it changes an organization to have a few BISOs there as well.
Well, the nature of security leadership is certainly changing, but equally there are different types of CISOs wearing different types of hats. You've got technical CISOs, post-breach CISOs, transformational CISOs. The role is incredibly adaptive. I think the reality that we all have to recognize is, our principal job is to manage business risk, but all of those dynamics change over time, which means that we have to be highly adaptive. I think the BISO role is probably the kind of closest quasi-leadership role in security that has a bit of a consultative hat to it, which maybe Snail, why you're naturally drawn to it, because I think it draws on a lot of your Capgemini experience and kind of pulls it all together and culminates in a role that was almost written for you, So I just think, we have to recognize that these roles are highly adaptive, and I think the BISO role probably the most adaptive of all. We have seen examples, albeit small examples, of organizations that believe that the responsibility and accountability should equally be dispersed to the point where they actually say, do we actually need a CISO? The BISOs can do the heavy lifting and be that senior leader, and actually the ultimate accountability sits with the business and the data owners and culminates with the board. Do we need that focal point in the way that we traditionally do? There's no right answer to this, but I think the standout point is that it's changing. The model is changing.
It's like saying, if you have SOC, then do you need a CISO, or does your SOC do everything that? So, as I said, BISOs tend to be the hands and arms of the CISOs into the organization and bring that kind of intelligence and knowledge and information that is almost impossible for a CISO to know or retain or process on. And, Adriano, you said that there's one recipe for all, but it's just like when you have two kids at home and one wants waffle and one a pancake, it is almost the same, right? You just have a different mold, you just change the batter a little bit and then serve it to them.
Man, so, that's quite a great way to think of it.
That's a very good analogy, because that's what you go through the business, right? I mean, sometimes it's the same thing, but with a different flavor or shape and form, so...
Yeah, but the CISO will have the casting vote and say, I don't care, you're both having post.
Or the ingredients, right? The ingredients the CISO will decide. Those are the ingredients, and that's how we go about it.
So. There's the ingredients, what you're going to make of it. So I'm just making a list of all the things a BISO is. They're a diplomat, a translator, you do some sales, promotion, you talk to the other hand, long arms and hands of the CISO, you're the chef, I guess, serving up different things to different people. Sounds great. It's sort of, maybe if people listening to this want to be a BISO, give it a go. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. Sounds great. Thanks, Adriano. Thanks, Sunil. Thanks, Paul. And thanks for listening. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues, tell your dog. Maybe they want to listen as well. You can now find ISR podcasts on all major podcast platforms. platforms, look for our page on Audioboom or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Where just search for Dear InfoSec and it'll be on there. And the podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn more about ISF research tools and guidance.